Thanks for joining us on The Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. I'm Rick Chen at Blind, and we have Lewis Tuff, the Vice President of Engineering at Blockchain.com. Lewis Tuff is the responsible for the technology underpinning Blockchain.com services. And for those that don't know, Blockchain.com provides people worldwide with easy and safe access to cryptocurrency. They have users in more than 200 countries, recently surpassed $1.2 trillion in transactions on its platform, and are valued at $5.2 billion. Before Blockchain.com, Lewis worked at Revolut, where he spearheaded the company's crypto initiative and scaled the engineering team at the neobank to more than 50 professionals. Lewis began his career building trading and risk technology systems at Goldman Sachs and UBS. Besides that, were you also Superman, Lewis?
not quite.
I'm curious how you kind of started your career, if there's any kind of one moment where you thought, yes, finance and crypto is what's right for me.
Sure. Well, first, thanks for inviting me on. It's great to be on the show. In terms of the career trajectory and how it all started, I think the university studied artificial intelligence as part of computer science, and that was kind of a niche course at the time. So something I've been passionate about for a long time, and really that it touched on a lot of my passions and interests around psychology, technology, computer science, and how you can kind of merge all three of those fields into one discipline. And then what happened is the careers fairs came along, and you had these very impressive career stands from the leading investment banks on Wall Street, and really kind of were showing off the scale and size of their infrastructure, the complexity of these different systems they're building, and the kind of speed and throughput that they were dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And that was kind of unparalleled and unmatched in any other industry. So yeah, they kind of drew me in with this great sales pitch and the opportunity to work on systems at large scale, complex technical problems, and working within a domain at that time I did not know much about, understanding financial markets, learning something new, and applying it to kind of the real world. It was what kind of first pulled me in. And then in terms of,
go ahead, Liz.
I say in terms of crypto, that came after being within these investment banking environments and realizing how restrictive actually they were in terms of personal financial endeavors and being able to deploy capital into different investments and explore different opportunities. Everything is heavily controlled. Everything requires prior approval. You kind of limit the scope of different investments you could potentially invest in by working in those kind of environments. And then I stumbled across Bitcoin and the white paper whilst in these environments. And I was like, wow, great. An asset that I can actually invest in and something that is completely new and innovative. So once I read the white paper, I was like hooked. It again touched on all of my passions around computer science, fundamentals, distributed systems, and getting your hands dirty with it is the best way to learn quickly and easily. So went through jumped through a lot of hoops to buy my first Bitcoin, sending funds to far away banks and different accounts to finally then get calls from my own bank here in the UK asking me why I was sending money abroad through these intermediaries. What was this transaction for? I just applied e-commerce and that seemed to satisfy them for now. It went on this journey to buy my first Bitcoin, and the rest is kind of history.
One of the reasons I was really excited to speak with you, Lewis, is I have Bitcoin and Ethereum and others, but through Grayscale, which is not necessarily an ETF, but sort of ETF-like. And one of the reasons why, when I heard about Bitcoin years ago, it just seemed such a hassle to get a key code and everything. Can you, for, I would say for the audience, but really for me too, like how, what is like, what's the process? How does it work at blockchain.com? So let's say, you know, Rick and I are interested in buying some, you know, Bitcoin. Like, how does that, is, how does the process work? Is it cumbersome? Is it now just like really smooth?
Sure. Yeah, great question. So blockchain.com, we have a few different products. Our main one being the blockchain.com wallet. You can download that in the App Store, iOS, Android, or just connect via your browser. And really what that offers you is a simple way to sign up for a blockchain.com account and wallet. A wallet here is a way of managing all of your crypto and fiat assets in one place. And
but wallet is just like an account, right? It's just another name for having an account where you could put it in there. It's,
exactly, yeah. So if you think about having a Barclays, Lloyds, or Chase account, mm-hmm. it's just like any of those. And really, there in some of the bank accounts, you can have multiple currencies, right? And more of these challenger banks are offering kind of multiple currency accounts. So you can think of it just like your bank account, where you have multiple different assets, different tokens represented. And during the sign up and onboarding experience, we really kind of ask you about what is your intent here? And if you want to purchase and buy Bitcoin for the first time, we'll take you through this flow and experience. And the onboarding process is very quick. You can sign up, get verified, because we are regulated. So prove your identity, go through KYC like any other financial service product, and go through an e-commerce checkout process in around kind of 90 seconds end to end. And so if you're familiar with kind of buying online or buying through an app, this should be kind of no different. You go in and say, hey, I want $100 worth of Bitcoin. You can use your card, debit, credit, or connect your bank account. And then once you go to checkout, you'll then be charged on your card or via bank account and be deposited with the representative amount of Bitcoin in your wallet. And then you can choose to hold that and sit on it and follow the kind of hold crowd. Or you can swap that for other tokens and assets that we support. And again, that's just kind of a seamless click of a button to say, hey, I want to transfer and swap all of my Bitcoin for Ether or all of my Ether for another asset.
And see, that brings up another thing, Rick. I'm not sure. I don't know if you mind me asking, Rick, but do you invest in Bitcoin or Ethereum or other cryptocurrencies?
I do not. So I'm quite keen to have this conversation.
Yeah. So you're in the same boat as me. You got to listen intently, right?
Exactly. I'm much more quiet than usual because it's the gears turning in my head. I'm so curious because what you described, it sounds quite simple, quite
yes. Easy. But it wasn't like that, right, Lewis? It was more complicated right. 5-10 years ago, wasn't it?
It definitely was not like that previously. Yeah. And so, yeah, the early experience that I and many of us had was extremely cumbersome. You first had to buy or source a provider of the asset you're trying to buy, in this case, mostly Bitcoin. And there weren't kind of these exchanges offering an array of diverse selection of different assets that have been kind of well-tested and proven and been around with a lot of history. You basically had a lot of small companies cropping up that offered to sell you this, and some of them directly, some of them indirectly. One of the most popular ways was actually in-person transactions through like local Bitcoins and basically meeting people in the street and actually sending the transaction live. And also, yeah, I would not personally recommend doing that, but that used to be one of the kind of primary ways of being able to transact. And I think for myself, the other problem was the localization of payment rails wasn't there. And so the on and off ramps were not mature. And that really meant you were limited to a very few different ways of getting fiat funds in and then crypto out. And so again, that meant often if you're in the UK and you only had sterling pounds, or you're in Europe, you only have euros, you first had to like exchange it into say dollars. Then you had to use a dollar account, which is not easy to access and get a hold of for everyone. Then you have to wire your funds to some random bank account. And then that random bank account will be used to finally exchange into the crypto asset, which you hope then they're going to send you back, right? And so it's this process that was cumbersome. You have to jump through a lot of hoops and there's a lot of hurdles. And there's a lot of trust that you had to put in unproven products, services, and companies.
And when it comes to trading, and this again is a very naive question, so don't laugh at me. I mean, so let's say I have Bitcoin in there, I want to trade. Now, it seems like a lot of Bitcoin holders are holding it because they think it's going to appreciate value. So, but if you trade it, you're kind of selling it for something else. Wouldn't you hold it? Or are you trading and arbitraging on different exchanges? Like, okay, maybe it's Bitcoin is trading at X amount on your platform, but somewhere else is less. How does that really work? Do you have a sense of that?
Sure. Yeah, I can definitely talk to the technology and mechanics. I think I'd caveat this is not investment advice. You should do your own research and make sure that you're kind of well informed. In terms of mechanics, so you have a few different options, right? So we offer in our wallet a brokerage product, which is this kind of e-commerce style checkout experience I was describing. And so that's the simplest way and the most accessible way for most people that just want to get some small exposure and use a familiar on-ramp like a credit card or using ACH or using SEPA to get access to it, the underlying token, and to hold it. And so the brokerage products, like ourselves and many others, offer this very easy window in to buy and sell tokens using a familiar payment method. It's generally for a smaller amount. We do support up to kind of like pretty significant sums, but for institutional clients or high net worth clients, you wouldn't use this approach. And there's kind of transparent fees on that, but they're generally higher than if you were to go onto, say, an exchange. Because you're paying for the convenience, you're paying for the service, and you're paying for the instant access. And then the second kind of bucket are exchanges. You have these kind of two-sided order books, which is known as a limit order book, which has a set of buyers and a set of sellers. And you have a price on both sides that they're willing to buy the asset at and they're willing to sell the asset at. And if you look at the exchanges like Blockchain.com Exchange or some of our competitors, you'll see the live order book is constantly moving as different orders to different buyers and different sellers that are placing orders and canceling orders and changing the amounts that they're willing to sell or buy are updating and moving in real time on the order book. So at any one time, you can see, okay, there's like half a Bitcoin available and this is the price. Or there's like a couple of Bitcoin available and this is the price at which I would have to pay to purchase that. And so that's the alternative approach you have. That tends to be a little bit more involved and sophisticated. You have kind of richer trading experience. You've got charting and you can look at the insights on how trades have happened over time and what the live pricing is. You can view the order book to see what the interest is and how many people at any one time are willing to buy or sell the asset that you wish to purchase. And you have a number of other kind of pieces of functionality. This is kind of really just scratching the surface. If you want to get more involved in managing the trading experience, you mentioned like arbitrage and hedging. I mean, there's a lot of kind of trading specific terms here. I think that if you're just looking to get an easy way to buy on a regular cadence, the brokerage product and recurring purchases feature is the simplest way for you. If you want to start to kind of time
the market. Is that like a dollar cost averaging with stocks where you buy, you set up like every month, I'm going to buy, let's say a certain amount of the S&P index. And sometimes it'll buy high, sometimes low, sometimes medium. But over the course of time, you know, you probably won't buy it at the highest price or the lowest point, but you get a nice average. Is that kind of what you mean?
Exactly right. Yes, we have this feature, which is recurring buy. And yes, exactly. It translates to dollar cost averaging. And is exactly what you said. You set the cadence and the frequency and the amount. And so you're hoping then to smooth out and all the highs and lows and get in at a decent average and see yourself accumulate those funds over time. And so for those that are looking to like put away a little bit each month when they get paid, maybe they're kind of foregoing a night out and deciding, actually, I want to put that in Bitcoin instead. You can do that on some regular cadence and just kind of set it, forget it, and just leave it to accumulate automatically. So that is definitely one option. And it's kind of, again, a very simple and convenient feature and product that, that we offer. But yeah, if you want to start getting deeper into it and like seeing how the market is trending over time, making kind of intuitive decisions on the direction you think the price is going to go, then the exchange is more for you and you can have greater control over different opportunities and places when you would decide to buy and sell. And you can set different order types to manage that effectively.
And your platform offers the exchange as well, right? Where you can do everything you just mentioned.
Correct, yeah. So we have the blockchain.com exchange, which is a full-featured product and mobile app experience. And that's kind of a more sophisticated environment for those that want to dive a little bit deeper and have greater control. And then we have the blockchain.com wallet with the brokerage product, which is a buy, sell, and swap experience that is just one-click swap and one-click checkout and is meant for kind of convenience and easy, simple access.
So what you described, Lewis, just sounds so simple. And, you know, I've worked with enough engineers to know that oftentimes the more simple something seems, often it's quite complicated and quite a tough technical challenge. I'm curious how you and your team approach that and made this all so simple and easy to interface with.
Yeah, great observation, very astute. Definitely simple product experiences take a lot of both product and engineering effort and investment to really pull that off effectively. So look, we have a great team of engineers and product managers that are constantly thinking about the consumer and user experience and really understanding what are the pain points for both new customers that are coming into the space for the first time and don't necessarily have any background in financial markets, let alone the crypto markets, as well as those that have been here for a long time, more than a few years, relatively, and really kind of understand a little bit more about the crypto ecosystem, different product experiences available, and want a more tailored, more complicated, or a more feature-rich experience. And so for us, we're kind of, yeah, keeping in mind the multiple profiles or personas of users and building products and features around them. And in terms of the technical architecture, we are in this kind of fast-paced and exponentially growing environment industry. I mean, we now have over 80 million wallets globally. We have around 38 million verified accounts. And as you mentioned, in over 200 countries, that takes a lot of effort to make sure that we can service everyone equally and fairly and transparently and simply, no matter where you are in the world. And it comes back to some of these earlier points around investing in localization. That's a big kind of key driver for us. We actually have recently expanded in the last 6 months into Latin America pretty heavily and have invested in significant teams out there, infrastructure, and are now building out the product experiences that make sense for those markets. And we've definitely have learned a lot through that process. And I think for us, it is about kind of hyper-localization. It's about going into these different regions, going to different countries, understanding from being on the ground how crypto can be an enabler and empower individuals and what it is that they need from our products to be effective. And so how does that translate into the technical architecture? It means you have to build and focus on building more platform architecture and services that can then be extended and reused and tailored to the specific markets, right? So instead of just building out a monolithic application or system, that assumes and sets a bunch of assumptions around how the product's going to be used, how you're going to interface with it. We're actually breaking that apart, decoupling it, and saying, okay, we know that brokerage has some key fundamental attributes like buy, sell, and swap. But beyond that, how it's going to be used within a specific country, like recurring buys or peer-to-peer transfers, or using different localized rails, there we should make no assumptions around that, because that's going to have to be tailored to the specific user base that we're targeting. And so that's really kind of like how we think about breaking down a problem. It's like, okay, what are the atomic units that remain consistent no matter where we are in the world? And then what are the components of the system that have to be hyper-localized to offer the best product experience?
As you hyper-localize the technical infrastructure, are you also hyper-localizing the people infrastructure for a Latin America-focused service or feature set? Are you focusing on hiring folks from Latin America and et cetera around the world?
Yes, no, totally. So we are a global team. We have over 550 people now globally, and majority of those are all remote first and working remotely at any one time. We do have kind of engineering hubs around the world for co-location, for collaboration, and for kind of working through those more nuanced product and engineering challenges. But generally, yeah, people are able to work remotely and freely. The main consideration is you have a strong internet connection and you're co-located on some reasonable time zone. So we are expanding globally, but you still need to make sure that you're cognizant of time zones and working on a crossover that makes sense for your team or squad. And so, yeah, to answer your question on LATAM, we've invested heavily there. We have around 170 people now in Latin America. Around half of those are engineers, and we're super excited. We acquired a few companies out there and have hired organically. And yeah, we just set up a new office and did a big launch in the last few months. And it's exciting to see kind of the product that they're building, which are tailored and native to the local markets. And I was there just kind of a month or so ago, seeing kind of firsthand, meeting the team, but also understanding the use cases and the different problems that people encounter. And you do need people on the ground that are living and breathing the culture, know the market, and understand the pain points, because their crypto assets and the ecosystem is not a speculative tool. It's actually a utility on how they are able to manage and control their finances without being kind of hyperinflated away and without kind of capital controls. And so it allows them to kind of interact with the global market and get paid by companies abroad, offer their services, buy products internationally, which otherwise would be very difficult. And so for me, that's kind of was eye-opening to see that happening in real time and see kind of how embedded actually crypto assets already are in people's day-to-day lives and seeing the kind of utility and impact that it can have on improving their quality of life. And I think for me, that's kind of why I'm in this industry, why I'm at blockchain.com, big believer in kind of financial democratization and being able to offer something more than just a speculative tool is really exciting.
So that's so fascinating. So if let's say Argentina and Venezuela, where their currency, their fiat currency is perhaps, let's say, going down and hyperinflation is going, they're not looking to trade. They're just saying, hey, I'm better off buying whatever kind of digital assets that could have some appreciation, because if I'm relying on the country's fiat currency, I could be in a lot of trouble because it's not worth it. And here in the US, I think we're starting to feel that way too. I don't know how it is in the UK, but Rick, right? Here, inflation is raging. Yes, and yes. I could see, and the dollar is weakening. So I could see us here in the US becoming like Latin America, say, hey, wait a minute, to hedge our bets. And first you have to have the means to do so. So I guess it can't be for everybody just now, or maybe it can be if you just, because you could, you don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin, right? Or a whole
No,
right? You could buy
exactly right. Yes, you can buy fractional amounts.
Yeah,
a couple of dollars. Like, you don't have to buy a whole unit of any one token or currency, which is the great thing about this. And I think, to your point, actually, a lot of folks, they do need some cash in their local currency to facilitate their day-to-day living. However, the majority of their pay or take home or savings, they do not want to hold in their native currency. And so having kind of a product where they can have salaries or transfer funds in easily via native payment rails, so localized payment rails, and then they get to manage what proportion they want to then transfer out into cash at any one time is like super exciting and provides real value to them day to day and helps to kind of protect them from their local currency, which, yeah, is not necessarily moving in the right direction. And I think, look, you have kind of risk assets and volatile assets like Bitcoin and Ethereum and many others, but you also have stable coins. And so for many folks, they actually want to get access to US dollars, right? And a lot of people still see the US dollar as being this reserve currency, even with the kind of inflation we're seeing.
Right.
I think that it's still seen as like the go-to asset for many individuals around the world. And now you can have many different USD stable coins. So a token that is backed one for one for US dollar in a bank account, but it's a digitized and tokenized asset that you can transfer, hold, and interact with using your Bosch.com wallet. And I think for a lot of people, that is really quite interesting and powerful, because it means they have $100 in their wallet and they're still gonna have $100 next week, right? I mean, we obviously would love more and more people to get exposure to crypto, because there's a lot of value in Bitcoin. But this is also a very powerful tool that goes beyond, as you say, the speculative side, or even just over-indexing on one token. I think that the ecosystem and the technology opens up all these different use cases and provides a lot of different utility that solve real world problems. And that's what's kind of really kind of a driving factor for us.
So you're an early adopter of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, quite obviously. Many members of the blind community are interested in cryptocurrency, Web3. Would you say that you have to have the same kind of knowledge or cryptocurrency experience as you do if you want to become, let's say, a blockchain engineer?
I think I'll answer that in two ways. So I think one, to get into the space and get exposure and experience kind of the potential, you don't need to have a background or be an academic or have studied this for years and years. I think the great thing about the cryptocurrency ecosystem is the community. Like, these tokens, these projects, these products are driven by community. And there are a lot of opportunities off the back of that to learn and understand both the technical terms and the mechanics of, like, what is a blockchain? How does it work? Why is there some inherent value in this tokenized asset? As well as actually just getting exposure to the different use cases. And so I think that if you want to learn, start downloading a couple of different products and try them out. You don't, with all of them, you don't even need to necessarily transfer any funds, right? You can just play around the experience and understand how it works. There are also many educational platforms that have cropped up, and you can go through kind of courses and tutorials. And I think, like, YouTube is a great educator nowadays and becomes kind of a go-to source for a lot of people for an array of different problems they're trying to solve. And I often go there first before anywhere else for any kind of problem I'm trying to solve. And I think that there are some great opportunities to learn and at your own pace and dive into certain topics and look at, okay, how does Bitcoin differ from Ethereum? And why did Ethereum get built? And what is a smart contract? And why is that useful? And you can start diving in and double clicking on these specific concepts and topics and doing that at your leisure using the tooling that's available to you for free. And I think that's what's really exciting. And then once you've kind of engaged with that, that you'll start going down this rabbit hole and getting part of the community, joining Discords, following people on Twitter and engaging with them. I think you'll be surprised at kind of how willing people are to help, educate, guide, and mentor folks first coming to the space. And then the second thing on the technical side, the beauty about this, if you are an engineer, but you don't necessarily have a cryptocurrency background or understand any of the protocol implementations, is that the majority of them are open source. And so you can go to GitHub and you can actually look at the code, the source code, and go through and try and get an understanding of what's been implemented, how it's been implemented, and why. And again, there's a great like bootstrap projects you can do to write your own blockchain and try that out. There's kind of Coursera courses around that. There's code on GitHub as reference examples. And like what better way as an engineer to understand this than, as I mentioned earlier, like get your hands dirty and actually write some code and try out these core concepts. What is a node? What is a transaction? How do they interact? What is a miner? Like in going through the code base and actually building something and deploying it is a great way to achieve that.
So what does the interview process look like? You know, if I wanted to join blockchain.com and to my bosses that are listening to this podcast, no, I do not want to join.
Yeah, you don't see me very interested, Rick. Yeah, I'm glad you made that disclaimer.
Right, yeah.
No, you don't want to get yourself in trouble. You're like, wait a minute, how do I get in on this? I could see it.
But what does that process look like? Is there a sneak peek that you can give us?
Sure. I think that these are really tailored depending on the exact role you're going for. But I think there are some common attributes or principles. I mean, one of them is that we're looking for builders. We're looking for people that love to dive deep into hard problems and come up and propose solutions. And they won't rest, they won't stop until they're able to solve that problem effectively, efficiently, and transparently. And I think no matter whether you're like going into our finance department, into product, into customer success, or into engineering, that's kind of a common trait of everyone here. Like everyone is very tenacious. They want to dive in and are very curious about understanding the root cause of problems and how you go about solving those in kind of an elegant and customer-centric way. So I think that's kind of the number one recommendation. I mean, the second one is research. I think you'd be surprised the number of people that actually don't do any research on companies when they interview for them, let alone like the crypto industry. And I think, look, you need to have some level of understanding of like, why do you want to join? What is the reason that you want to switch industries? Is it just because you saw it on the front page of a media article, or is there some kind of inherent interest? And I've had some great conversations with candidates as we've opened up this kind of global opportunity, which again, have had real world problems. They've moved their funds out of their bank accounts due to capital controls in their country and put them into a stable coin or another asset. And that's then saved them from significant haircuts, or it's allowed them to actually buy products internationally or put their savings to better use. So I love kind of hearing the stories of like how they've interacted with it or what it is that they've tried to experiment with. So I think, experimentation research is key. And then I think the third thing is really kind of, it is community driven. So being kind of open, transparent, and collaborative is pretty important. Like you can't work in a silo here at the company. We need everyone to be kind of open and transparent and communicative, especially when we're asynchronous and working remotely. And I think the whole industry is built on community. And so I think I can't kind of overstate that enough, that like you need to be willing to engage, you need to be willing to kind of have an opinion and have these kind of like healthy, contentious conversations around building the best in class product experience or building the best in class infrastructure to ensure that actually we're getting to the right solution and not just kind of a single person's opinionated solution.
It's such an interesting thing that plays out, because when you mention community, from just firsthand example, when I write an article for Forbes and I talk about maybe a certain NFT project, or yep. I reference a certain crypto in the story, oh my gosh, it's on, it just in Twitter, it just erupts. And you know, you have people who are just enamored with that project, whether it's the NFT or crypto, certain cryptocurrency, and then they start argue with each other why theirs is better, or trying to get attention to say, here we are. So how does that kind of develop? Because you don't see that at Citigroup. And this is not a knock on Citigroup or JP Morgan, where you have this like intense, yeah, this group, you know, in risk management is fantastic. Yeah, we're great. You don't see that. But within your space, it's just so common to get this large, not just like, you know, small group, but like large. How does it go on? Does it start with Discord? How does this happen?
Well, I think that part of it is accessibility. Yeah. I mean, if you want to become a client of a wealth manager on Wall Street, you have to have and jump through a lot of hoops, right? You have to have a significant amount of wealth, be accredited investor. You have to like go through this process that is out of reach for majority of the world and population. And so I think like crypto allows people to actually find new innovative ways to interact, to deploy capital, to see returns, to earn rewards. Like these are kind of new rethought ways of building these kind of financial services and products. And that kind of financial democratization comes into play. And I think like lowering the barriers to entry, making it more accessible and giving everyone a consistent pathway into the product experience builds this kind of community and virality around your product. And tokens, projects, obviously, are offering many different experiences off the back of, say, owning an NFT of a certain collection will then give you kind of real-world perks and access to community events or gigs or going to exclusive settings. And I think like that's actually the really interesting part of the NFT interest and hype, is that we're now seeing kind of this crossover from just having a digital collectible or asset on chain that is purely just a piece of art and people are buying it because they believe that the artwork will appreciate and they also have some inherent interest in the artist or the underlying artwork. You're now seeing them become digital passes, and these are unlocking real world perks and rewards and access to a whole multitude of different utilities which weren't previously possible. And I think so community is built from offering a service or product that people can engage with, they see value in, and it's accessible. And I think if you manage to kind of do all three of those, you're going to kind of build this virality and build this kind of fanaticism in whatever project you're developing.
Now, do people hit you up because they feel there could be a project that could be made or something done? You and your team to say, oh, can you do this? This would be so cool.
Yes. I think like myself and everyone else that works here often get inbound from people that are wanting to start the next best thing in the NFT space or the next best thing in wallets or staking or on-chain apps. So there's like, a lot of that for sure. And even within kind of close friends and my network, everyone believes they have like this $1 billion idea. And usually it's along the lines of like, oh, how about we create like a point system like Air Miles and Amex points that's like on chain, and we can reward individuals using the NFT technology. I've heard that one many, many, many times over the last 12 months.
That sounds, maybe it's a good idea, but it sounds stodgy, right? It doesn't fit with
the ethos, really, right?
No, exactly. It's not something that I can personally get excited about. Yeah. I don't think it's really that innovative. Yeah. And so I think there are better ways to invest your time, energy, and capital, quite frankly. But I think, yeah, if you're trading off your time working at a company, then you should invest your time wisely, because it's the one thing you can't get any more of, and choose a project, choose a team, and choose a mission that you believe in. And that's kind of what we're aiming to do here at Latino Calm, and why I'm still here kind of over 4 years later.
You're being very patient with Rick and my question. So I have another. When you say staking,
yes,
I've heard that term. And once again, it's one of those things you hear the term and you don't know who to ask. So now it's perfect. What does that really mean, staking?
There are different ways of gaining consensus on a distributed system. And so with Bitcoin, you've probably heard about how much energy is being consumed by the Bitcoin mining networks and all of the node operators. And so that's kind of called proof of work. The alternative to that, and there are a number of these, but one of the alternatives is called proof of stake. And it's a way of actually securing the underlying protocol by putting up an amount of assets that you own, and then you will then validate and verify the transactions that are going into a block that is going to be stamped and persisted. So you have this collection of transactions that are a state of the ledger and saying, okay, here's all the credits and debits. You're going to validate and verify them. You've put up a sum of money in this case.
And these money meaning dollars or digital?
So tokens in the underlying assets. So for example, Polkadot is one example protocol, and DOT is the token. And so what you do is you put up a proportion of your DOT that you hold, and that may be significant, maybe small, but you basically lock it up and say, look, I want to become a validator in the network and start validating the transactions and proving that we have consistency across this whole distributed system, because it's trustless, right? You want to make sure that anyone in the network is not acting nefariously and is not trying to change the state of the world for their own personal gain. And so if everyone in the network is validating, verifying these transactions, they then compare the results, and if they align, you reach consensus, and that's what gets persisted. If one of them doesn't align, what they will do is actually take a proportion of your funds, and so, which is known as slashing. And that's if you've intentionally tried to change the state of the world and diverge from what the majority are saying is the real set of transactions that have happened and occurred. Or it's if you said you want to be the validator and you haven't met the uptime requirements of that node. And so there's like two ways that you could be penalized by kind of engaging and being part of this distributed network. And so really you put up these funds to secure the network, you run all these operations, as long as you're behaving in a way that is legitimate and verifiable and valid, then you have like no concerns. And because you are actually putting up funds and you're running infrastructure, the protocol then rewards those individuals for securing the network, and staking and staking rewards is then the net result of that. So you're earning more DOTs in return for actually securing and verifying and validating all these transactions that are happening over the network. And so that's really kind of a high level summary of what staking is. And there's different types and nuances there, but yeah, if you just understand, you take some of your funds, your DOT, you lock them up, you're gonna be validating these transactions. If you decide to be nefarious and try and change the state for personal gain, you're gonna lose some of your funds, potentially all of them. And then yeah, later on, if you wanna withdraw the funds that you have locked up for staking, you're like, okay, I've earned X percentage of rewards, I wanna withdraw those now. you can do that. And then there's a process to kind of unstake those funds, which takes a varying degree of time depending on the underlying protocol.
So I would imagine if you're very passionate about a certain digital asset or token, and you say, hey, I'm so passionate, I'm going to stake, I'm going to put up collateral, and I'm going to kind of keep my eye out to make sure that everything that's going on is on the up and up and legitimate, you know, because I'm doing my part.
Yes.
And this probably goes back to the whole community feel. It's like, hey, like, you know, you have a neighborhood watch, you know, people are going to take
over their own
free will to watch and make sure everything is cool, everything is safe.
Yeah, exactly right. That's basically the mechanics, and that's a good analogy of how this works. It's like you have people that are willing to put up their personal capital to help protect the network and allow it to continue to grow and thrive.
Which is commitment. That shows you're really committed to the you know, to the company, to the token, to fairness.
Exactly right. Yeah, and that's why you get rewarded, right? It's like if there was no incentive there, less people would do it. And so you then kind of break down this kind of trustless environment. You end up with just a few people that know them or the project team or company that would end up being involved. Whereas now, yeah, anyone can do it. It's accessible, goes back to the kind of the original point. And it really does serve a purpose. And so, if you're a believer in the project token and its future, then it's a great way to get rewarded. And then like we're building out kind of a whole suite of additional product features, but we have a rewards product within our wallet. And so if you just today decide that you would like to deposit your crypto assets with us, we'll actually pay you a return. And it depends.
A decent amount of interest, right?
Yeah, I mean, we added Celo. So that's kind of the Euro stable coin. Earlier we mentioned about USD stable coins. There's also Euro backed stable coins. Yeah, we're paying 14% interest on those annually right now.
How is that possible? Because that's like interest at the bank. I think I'm getting 0.00001% at the bank. How does that work?
Yeah, that's a whole staking is one way to earn yield. There's multiple ways of generating kind of interest or yield on your assets. One is staking. One is kind of lending markets. They're going back to kind of the exchange example. You have buyers and sellers. You also have borrowers and lenders, right? And so if you are sat on savings that are denominated in DOT or ETH or Bitcoin, and you want to put them to work, you could say, hey, actually, I'm willing to lend you $10,000 worth of ETH, and you just need to pay me back a percentage or a couple of percentage points on top of that, right? And so you agree between two counterparties. And if you imagine over the counter doing that between two of you, and you just kind of extrapolate that at scale, you create this kind of lending market where companies, institutions, miners, trading firms, and individuals are looking to kind of free up cash and capital, and they want to use their crypto assets as collateral. And so you can do that and kind of loan out and borrow the assets you need.
That's what happens in the securities market, where you have stock lending, you have a whole
exactly division. Right. Yeah.
So it's very similar to that. And this is a way for people, you know, to kind of make a little extra yield on it. If your money or your tokens are just sitting there, you're not doing anything, you're not trading with it. All right, I'll get some extra income on it while I'm here.
Exactly. Yeah. And so our rewards account basically abstracts all that complexity away from you. You just custody your funds with us, and we're able to pay you the rates that we display in our app.
So I'm seeing a lot of interplay between kind of, let's say, traditional finance and this decentralized finance. Do you find that folks that have a very similar background to you coming from the banks or traditional finance do particularly well in terms of working at blockchain.com or perhaps other places in the decentralized finance cryptocurrency space?
Sure. I actually think it's a bit of a mixture. I think it's actually great to come into the space not being having your kind of perception skewed by existing constraints and existing guardrails, because I think actually a lot of things are being rethought from the ground up, and it's hard to do that if you have a mental model of how things should or were done. And actually thinking kind of laterally and creatively comes more easily, right, when you don't have those existing models in mind. Sure. And so, yeah, it's a really kind of diverse, mixed set of backgrounds. For sure, there are teams that are focused on trading, so financial markets knowledge is required there. But I think in terms of our overall product experience and improving that for consumers, it's definitely not financial markets or services heavy. We have engineers from all sorts of backgrounds. And this goes back to the kind of key principles. We're looking for builders. So folks that have built great consumer experiences, whether that's kind of like video calling, whether that's like chat applications, whether that's e-commerce apps and retail experiences, or anything else in between. Like, we really are kind of searching for best talent to build best in class products. And I think, yeah, over-indexing on finance is not the way to achieve that.
Got it. I'm sure you can imagine the blind community, they're an ambitious bunch.
Yeah.
They're always talking about compensation, job leveling, what's the in at a certain company. And I'm quite curious, are you ever willing to push the boundaries with pay or job levels for a candidate that you're particularly keen to hire?
So I think that we have a process to constantly refresh and remark, so re-index our levels and salary bands. And we're not doing that on a quarterly basis because the market is shifting so fast. Traditionally, people would do that on an annual basis. And you have these data sets that you purchase that are only refreshed once a year. And clearly that doesn't work in an environment like right now, where there's tons of competition, great talent out there that are getting inundated with inbound. And so for us, I think it's less about kind of over-indexing on a single person and trying to kind of throw everything out the window. It's more about making sure we're competitive full stop across all roles and all levels, and we're paying a fair market rate on both the cash portion and the equity portion. And so, yeah, I don't think that there's like, we throw the rule back out. It's more just about making sure consistently we're fairly paying all employees.
And do you offer pay in tokens or digital assets even?
Yeah, actually you can opt in to decide to take a proportion or all of your salary in Bitcoin. And so if that's something that you're interested in doing, we make that available to the majority of our employees. And just payroll will handle that. So it all goes through normal tax process. You just get the net paid in the token rather than in your fiat or local currency.
Now, can you do that, let's say, for blind and say if they were a client to set it up for them?
Yes. Yeah, so actually we haven't spoken about kind of the institutional product suite and platform. Right. But we have a whole institutional business, and we could onboard Blind as an institutional client, and we can manage the whole process for you or just manage some of the product features. And so, yeah, if you can think of this like a prime brokerage offering and platform, everything from execution, custody, research, lending, structured financing, and many more. It's a one-stop shop for institutional clients to come and have a very kind of high touch managed service where if you want to just offload all responsibility and complexity to us, you can do that. If you want to actually take custody assets, you can do that, and we'll just offer execution. So there's a lot of different options here, and we can definitely follow up if you're interested.
Because it makes sense when we talk about dollar cost averaging, same thing. If you're getting, maybe you don't take everything, like, let's say Rick doesn't take his whole paycheck in ETH, you know, Ethereum or what have you, Polkadot, but takes a little bit every you know 2 weeks or however he gets paid, then it's like, all right, it's on autopilot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think like it's really interesting to see kind of more and more platforms and products that are coming out offering kind of those merchant-based services. And even, yeah, in payroll, in some cases, like we are looking to partner with a significant payroll company that wants to offer crypto as an option for all of their contractors. And so that will be an exciting potential in the future. And really that comes back to our kind of platform model and architecture. It's like, we want to be an interoperable platform that offers a core set of components, services, and features, and invest in kind of building out these product experiences that are chain agnostic and token agnostic, and opens up APIs to allow the community to build on top of our foundations. And I think that's how we kind of continue to see growth in our space and how we also kind of give back to the community.
That's remarkable. Wow, that's a great way to win. And in terms of just the work that you're doing to not only contribute to your own community, but also the cryptocurrency or even the economic, dare I say, community at large. Thanks so much for being on the show, Lewis.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's been a fun conversation.
Thank you. I really appreciate your patience with our questions, but I think this is helpful because if we're asking, for every time we're asking a question, you know, there's so many people who wanted to ask what we're afraid to ask, didn't know to ask, didn't have the person to ask to. So we figured we'd be the fall guys to ask the dumb questions about how it all works. So this way, you know, now people say, oh, I get it. Because I wonder, Lewis, I was still thinking it was like 10 years ago where it was just so cumbersome to do. But now it's like there's no excuse not to just, to take a shot.
Yeah, I think, look, everyone should at least kind of read up and get hands-on experience with a product in the space. We believe this is the future, and building out a financial economy on the internet is really a powerful step forward. And it opens up and makes it more accessible for everyone globally.
Do you have on your site, kind of videos or just articles about everything you just talked about? So if you want to learn, Rick and I, but really everybody else who's going to be watching this, if they want to learn, yes, can they come there and just get a little tutorial?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So we have a knowledge base of like commonly asked questions and different token concepts and blockchain concepts on our website, blockchain.com. And also if you do sign up for our products, we send out, if you opt in, educational content regularly. So we do kind of deep dives into different tokens and chains and understanding the mechanics of those and why you would want to use them or interact with them. We dive into items and concepts like staking and others. And so, yeah, that's a good way to kind of get proactively in your inbox access to this educational content and kind of, yeah, upskill yourself on this financial revolution that is happening before our eyes.
I'm signing up. Seriously. I don't know where to buy. I'm going to do some homework. I didn't realize it got so easier. So yeah, absolutely. Because I was waiting for the ETF to come out, like in addition to the Grayscale. But you know what? This the way you described it, it's pretty frictionless. So yeah, I that was what was holding me back. So I think that's got a lot of people probably feel the same way, and they didn't have the fortune of me, speaking to you firsthand, but they watch it and now they'll know. So this is cool.
Exactly.
Right. Well, I'm glad we've got at least two new users today.
This is productive, right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.